It's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, episode 48, and we are, as always, in the car again. This is quite a new thing for us, Robert, but it's pretty much the only way we could record the podcast at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, what with circumstances being the way they are, you're working very early in the morning onwards through to dinner time or tea time, and then I'm at work at that point, and I don't get home till midnight or whatever it is. And so it's like we're almost living on the opposite sides of the world, and even though we only live 10 miles apart, so this is what works for us best.
And that's kind of relevant to what we're going to discuss this week. As well as that, we're going to talk a bit about the gender of your cast in audio drama. But before that, kind of a rant this week. Maybe not a rant or a meltdown, I would hope. But it's been a really bad week for me personally. And this isn't about me, you know, it's going to be relevant to you and to your creation and aspirations of making audio drama. But it's been a really bad week. Nothing particularly bad's happened. It's just been one of those weeks where I've just been chasing my tail the whole time. And as Robert said, I went back to work recently, so I'm doing two jobs at the moment. I'm getting up at 4:30 in the morning. I'm usually getting back at 5 at night. That's when you actually start your work, Robert, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
5 till 10, I think you do.
Yeah.
And on top of the two jobs, we're trying to do a weekly podcast, and we're trying to launch a new audio drama series. And I've just had loads to do, and I'm usually really organised, but I've actually, this week, I lost a couple of audio files, which, with technology as it is now, shouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
And it's just been a real shambles. It's been one of those weeks, and a few times I thought to myself, like, I wonder why. I think what drove this home for me was usually the TV will be on in the house when I have my tea, and the stuff that's on the telly, you know, like the Real Housewives of Bognor Regis or some glorified karaoke competition. To quote Father Ted, it's chewing gum for the eyes.
Yeah.
And
top 50 moments from reality TV, and it's got people talking about it, and you know, I don't know who you are. You're not an authority. This isn't a subject to be an authority on.
And at that point, you know, I'm searching on my laptop for this audio that I've lost, and I've got so many things to do. I've got emails to answer, and it got on top of me, and I thought to myself, like, what are we doing? Why are we like making this effort to get a weekly podcast out? Why are we planning on audio drama? And you, the listener, like, why? Here's a question for you. Why are you making audio drama? Why are you spending so much time doing this? What's in it for you? Why, you know, ask yourself, really, why are you doing what you do? Making audio drama, and you know, this is the thing, making a podcast easy, because although we have to find the time to get together and that, there's not too much to it. But making an audio drama, it takes up loads of your time. You aren't making any money. I mean, a small minority of you might be, but most of you aren't making any money out of it. You aren't reaching massive audiences at all. You're not making any money, but you need to pay the mortgage. You need to feed yourself and your family. So you need a day job, and that lessens the time available to you to create things. So, Robert, why do you think it is that we make all this effort to do this thing that doesn't really reach that many people?
Well, when you take away the time dedicated to the job, the job, whatever it is you do, then you're left with a set amount of time for responsibilities, other responsibilities, and then there's leisure time. And that's probably the time that is taken away by the work that we do in audio drama. It is fun, to some extent. It is also like hard work, but it's ultimately rewarding in what you finally produce, especially if it's not the first thing you've made and you've made some strides in making progress. So there is a sense of achievement there, you know. A lot of the best artists that have ever lived, or even some of the average artists that have ever lived that are competent, they do it not for the money, but for the self-satisfaction that they're going to leave something to the world that is, it was better than just playing a games console for 6 hours a day every day. So that's one aspect.
If you think about the creation of audio drama, you're actually trying to master two different arts writing and sound production.
Yeah.
Even to master one of these alone takes years of patience and very solitary, very lonely work. Just to get one of them right, we're actually, most of us making audio drama are trying to do both these things.
Yeah.
And it takes years to even reach a reasonably competent level.
That's something that I was thinking about the other day as well, is like, all right, we're getting better at one thing, you know, audio production, the audio side, and now we're starting to write an anthology after writing Aftermath and whatnot. And I'm thinking, hang on, has it ever occurred to us whether or not we're actually any good at writing? Are we going to improve? What's the standard? Okay, the sounds and things are getting much better. Should we be working with real writers or experienced writers to collaborate on projects that might make money in the future, if that's the main thing driving us, for instance?
Yeah, definitely. And that's certainly something I've been aware of. And as I mentioned on the show last week, I'm listening to lots of different stuff now. Yesterday, I was listening to the Once and Future Nerd, Christian Madeira, and I was just thinking, wow, what a deep, detailed plot. You know, what a vast amount of writing and research has went into this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's wee subplots and things going on. And it's almost like, yeah, that we maybe have spent the last 3 or 4 years, in a sense, neglecting writing for production, which, you know, I think it's good to concentrate on one thing and try and get really good at it at a time. I think maybe if you try and do both at once, there's always going to be one that suffers, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. So that's a kind of good way, bad way of putting it, or a good way, bad way of looking at it, not putting it. You put it very well. Is that, did we just hedge our bets and do half and half, or did we concentrate on one? And if you reckon we concentrated on one, then I'm happy with that, because it means we've gotten better with one. And maybe now it's time to concentrate on writing. I don't know. Or we work with people that are decent writers and make something that's wholly excellent. I don't know.
So I asked the listener, like, why do you bother? And you gave some insight into that yourself, Robert. But I think I could answer the question for the listener. I'm not psychic, but I'm going to have a stab at this. I think it's because that during your life, certain pieces of fiction have had such a profound impact on you. It has moved you to strive towards creating those moments for others. You want to create content that makes an impact. You want to craft stories, whether you're writing scripts or shaping a soundscape or both. You want to make these stories and you want them to have an impact on someone. You want to make someone laugh or cry or hold their breath in anticipation or sit in their car when they're already home because they want to hear what happens next. And I think it's these things that drive people forward, that, you know, that desire to have an impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, to create a story that will be enjoyed by someone else.
Yeah, the desire to create, that's absolutely part of it. And it's all about art, isn't it? About wanting to make something that isn't just gone in 5 minutes, you know? It's the same with playing in the band. As you know, I'm in a small covers band. We don't make... We'll maybe get paid, but it's basically expenses after you deduct all the fuel for driving about and practicing and stuff and instruments. But we do it for the love of performing for people as well. You know, you want an audience to hear you. So it's all down to that desire to perform, to create, and to show people, you know, that you're doing something worthwhile, I guess.
And, you know, when you're at your work, I've found myself even envying, you know, when we're finishing a really hard day and a few boys are saying that they're going to go home and have their tea and sit and watch the telly and chill out, and I'm thinking, I've got so much I need to do tonight. I really need to get back to that script. I need to do some editing. I need to answer some emails. I need to be working on the notes for this week's podcast. And it's easy to envy someone who's going to go home and just have a rest.
Yeah, or go out for drinks or do something that's just empty leisure time, if you like. I mean, they say leisure time wasted on leisure is never time wasted, but at the same time, if there is something creative you want to do and it's at the back of your mind, then it does feel like any time spent doing something else, including working, is time you could be spent writing, producing, or whatever.
Are creative people just doomed from the start? Is that really it? Are you doomed to live a life of just striving to create something, but every now and then you're going to feel the rewards of having created it? Is that a way to put it?
Yeah, I think we need to come to terms with it as... I was going to say, we need to come to terms with it as artists, but then I'd want to shoot myself in the face. As we need to come to terms with the fact that it's a lot of slog for not as much reward as you see other people on TV getting. You know, like musicians and stuff that... Or the top novelists. We're probably not going to achieve those lofty heights, but that's not why we started to do it in the first place. It's only when you start to get any good at something you think, oh, wow, yeah, maybe I'll be a millionaire. Well, I'd put those thoughts to the side. If it happens, great, but work first, party later.
And I suppose if you're striving to be a millionaire through being creative, audio drama is probably not the right medium for you to be concentrating your efforts in.
Yeah, there's lots of online screenwriting courses if you want to go down that route.
So I mentioned a wee bit about, you know, wanting to have that impact. And I think, you know, we're all, and you listening, you're very unique. You've got that spark inside you that's come from where you grew up, who you grew up with, you know, your family, your experiences in life, people you've lost. You know, it might be you lost your granddad you were close to, you might have lost your mum or your cat or whatever. You know, everything that's shaped you in life, all that sort of perspective, that's what your creativity's flown from. That it gives you this very, very unique perspective on things. So you're making stories and you're telling them and you're striving to have an impact. And I think you mentioned, Robert, it's almost a legacy thing. Like, without being morbid, We all have a limited time on Earth, and whatever you create is going to live a lot longer than you are. Long after you're gone, people will still be impacted by the things you've created. And anything that you haven't made, once you're dead, you know, that's dead with you. So without being morbid, that's kind of a bigger picture way to look at it as well.
It is, yeah. And I was looking at something yesterday where it was listing the top 500 authors since 1974. J.R.R. Tolkien was on it. He was one of the top-selling authors, obviously, Lord of the Rings. He died in 73, I think it was. So for him to be a top seller for decades after his death, and I thought, oh, isn't that great, though? Imagine, I wonder if he knew that his books would continue to sell so well after his death. What a nice thought that would be, you know? I'm not saying we're going to sell anything, like Lord of the Rings, but just as an example, you know, that something can live on like that. Or any novelist like J.M. Barrie from 100-odd years ago, or anyone like that, Lewis Carroll, concentrating on the fantasy side here, I guess. Yeah, it is a nice thought, especially with the internet being eternal, as it seems to be, pending any apocalypses. Whatever we make and put up there should stay there for quite some time.
So we talked about making an impact, and, you know, the fact that you put the TV on and there's just so much nonsense out there that seems to appeal to the mass market. And one thing I think about is, we all, like, we check our numbers and stats and things like that, and we wonder how wide our content's being heard. But in actual fact, I don't think it's about impacting or trying to impact thousands of people or even hundreds of people. Like, I think we need to focus on just impacting someone, impacting that one person that's listening right now.
Yeah.
For example, like yesterday, I've mentioned I'm listening to a lot of stuff, and I'm out there working away, and it's quite a cold morning, and I'm laughing out loud at this wee scene. There's a show, It's About Time, produced by Steve, who's a member of the Facebook group, and I was listening to that, and he's got this wee scene where the two characters are thinking things, and it's linked up, and it's done in quite a funny way, and I'm sitting there laughing out loud, and he's completely unaware, you know, halfway around the other side of the world, that in Scotland someone's laughing out loud at his content. And then I'm listening to Hidden Harbour Mysteries, and I'm listening to this scene where there's like a robbery at a dinner party, and I'm just so into this scene and so involved in it that when the credits rolled, suddenly I'm jerked out, and you have this sudden realisation that I was just actually listening to a performance. But in that moment, you're just so focused on the story that you completely forget about everything else. And those are the impacts. And all you out there that have your shows are making this impact on someone. And that is, you know, if you go home at night from your work and sit and watch your TV, you won't achieve that. You'll never have that impact. And to have that impact is brilliant. And I remember when we finished Aftermath, some of the comments that we had, I think it was Doug that told us he had a dream about Aftermath. Yeah. And you're thinking, like, really? You know, we sat and wrote that and made it, and we didn't expect to hear anything like that at that point. And it's those wee comments that make it all worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, and when we get an email like that, we don't think, well, that's fine, that's one man's opinion, but where's the rest of you? Where's the hordes of fans that we crave? No, we think that one email, that one opinion has made it all worthwhile, and it's heartwarming whenever you get something like that. And it's the same for all of us, I think. I think we all appreciate the feedback, especially in a niche of a niche, as you called it last week. You know, there's not tons and tons and tons of audio drama fans out there like there are for certain other media, but that's fine. Just a little bit of feedback, positive feedback, goes a heck of a long way, I think. That or money.
And I really don't think... I don't have a problem with people asking others to share their content if they like it. You know, that's a good thing, and it helps spread the show out there. But sometimes I get a wee bit annoyed when I see online, I'll see a listener telling a producer that they really enjoyed their show and they really enjoyed a certain aspect of it, and the producer or creator or whatever just comes straight on and goes, well, you know, like it and share it and retweet it. And you're thinking, well, fair enough, but can you not just enjoy this and maybe take a bit of time to talk to the person?
Yeah.
And just savour that moment that you've made an impact. Don't always just be looking for them to tell someone else.
To exploit them.
Yeah, so I think it's just being able to appreciate the feedback of one listener and don't see them as just one person. See that as, you know, essentially someone's life that you've at least had some sort of impact in, which is a really powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, if they're not already going to tell people, then you begging them, it probably isn't going to help. You know, when we first started listening to stuff, we were telling all and sundry that people need to listen to Edict Zero and We're Alive because it's brilliant. Stop what you're doing. Put down that modern digital versatile disc and listen to this instead. You don't need eyes. And we probably didn't reach that many people in terms of converting them to audio drama. So we probably don't need to worry about that too much. Focus on the people that are listening. Talk to them. Engage with them. And you'll be surprised how much more of a result you'll get from that.
And if you think about it, like, just in summary, audio drama is both a very old medium, but a very new medium at the same time, isn't it? It's a strange sort of time that we're living in, and nobody's really figured out how to... or very few people are earning any money from it. We're all doing it for the love and for the impact, as we've spoke about. But the speed technology is moving at the moment. I think things will change drastically over the next few years. And you at the moment are one of the pioneers. It's all a bit like the Wild West at the moment. And I think things that people do now will shape the way things are in the future. It's certainly impossible to predict with the speed of technology how things might look in 5 years, how things might even look next year, because things just change so fast. But everyone that's creating a show now, it's almost like the foundations, not of radio drama, but of modern audio drama, and these things will shape and influence generations of creators from years to come.
Yeah. When we first started out the radio course 5 years ago, coming up for, we were told that, you know, the technology is changing. There's going to be a revolution in radio and audio, and we expected it to happen overnight, and it hasn't quite happened overnight, but without a doubt, we have watched it progress. We've watched it happen, and with the news of what's going on in America in terms of podcasting availability, technology in cars, we can make a slight prediction about the future as well. A year or two ago, I thought, that revolution hasn't quite happened. But now I can see that it's just taking slightly longer to happen. There has been a resurgence in podcasting. And you're starting to see little signs here and there, like Audible. They've got one or two actual audio dramas rather than audio books. iTunes is starting to be a bit more specific. It is coming. I can feel it in my water.
So just in summary, if you, and you will have these weeks like the one I've just described that I've had, when you have these weeks, or even just when you have these days, and you're wondering, like, is this all worth it? It absolutely is. And just, you know, try and look at the feedback you've had, look at the script you're creating, or the episodes that you've created before, and just keep pushing forward, and things pick up again. You never stay down for too long in this medium. I think it's a really good community, a really encouraging community. So just push forward and get through those dips. And once you start getting content out there again, it, as you'll know yourself, it really is a very, very rewarding experience. And you can never achieve that just by going home at night and putting the telly on. You won't rival it.
Yeah, I've spent a good portion of my life playing computer games. I'm sure you have as well, Matthew. I have barely touched my PS3 games console in the last year or two because it's time I could be spending doing other stuff, basically. And is it time that I should be spending on it? I sometimes think, oh, I've never played the PS3 in ages. Maybe I should. Should? No, not necessarily. Maybe I could sit and watch a film. Nope. Time to get working. And it is more rewarding. And we're doing the right thing.
So up next, we mentioned we'd be talking a wee bit about the genders of your cast. And Robert, did you perhaps do something controversial the other day when you put out a casting call with an 8-to-1 ratio of men to women in a script that you'd wrote for Valenhigh?
That's very specific. You've been checking up on me. Yes. Okay, here's the thing. I finished the story. I privately contacted one or two people that I absolutely knew I would want to have as characters, as actors in Worse Than Chains, it's called. One of them's female. And it turned out she was the only main character who was female, with potential for one or two bit parts that could be male or female. So therefore, when I put out the casting call for remaining characters, it looked like there was basically nobody on there that was female, apart from, as I say, Taverner 2 or 3 could be male or female, basically. I saw one or two comments on the internet about not a lot of roles for women, and I kind of took it personally at first, and I thought, well, you know, this is a fantasy setting. Women are treated like dirt, and I'm not treating them like dirt, but at the same time, if I've got a Lord Ranger or a Taverner or a Magister, they're going to be male, damn it. And I had to take a step back and think, well, do they have to be? Why did I automatically assume in my mind that they'd all be male? And I thought to myself, well, next time then, in the next story, I will make sure that there are female characters. I will make sure that this person I've got in mind will be female rather than male. And then I thought to myself, so all I'm doing is writing a male character and then just switching in a she for a he, as opposed to writing a female character. And I got really kind of puzzled as to how my brain is wired. And I'm not a sexist person. I absolutely am not. I'll even go so far to say that I am a father to a 2-year-old girl, and I am absolutely committed to helping making this world the kind of place where she will have equal opportunities. Absolutely. So, is it my upbringing? Is it society that's done it to me? You know, what's the reason for it? Why do we just not see women as viable people in stories? What's going on? What's your experience, Matthew?
Well, I think firstly, I've made a few notes here. It's not without a certain irony that we as two men sit here and discuss this.
Yeah.
So I think first and foremost, it would be appropriate to, and I think I had a conversation with Fiona after Fiona Thrale after we'd recorded an interview a few months ago about this very subject, and I think I spoke to Fiona about discussing it on the show. So maybe we should make a conscious effort to make that happen.
Yeah.
First and foremost, that's...
We'll come back to that, because I've got a semi-announcement on that.
Right. Secondly, you mentioned, you know, sort of medieval authenticity. I think you would probably accept as well that authenticity it maybe isn't really an excuse because it's a work of fiction. So unless there was a real reason to have that sort of, you mentioned that, you know, women had less than favourable roles in, you know, in certain periods of history. But in, when we're writing fiction, I don't know how much we need to adhere to that. Certainly, it's a fantasy story. You mentioned about writing a male character and then just changing he to she. I would ask you, like, is there really any... Do you need to specifically write a female character? I would just think, and I might be wrong on this, that you write the type of character you want to write and then you either make them male or female. I don't really see a discernible difference between the two. Do you?
I wasn't sure. When I asked myself the question, am I writing a man and then making them a woman? I don't know.
Because what's the difference, really? Like, I know a lot of different men. I know a lot of different women. They've really got nothing in common. So I would just say write the character you want to write. And if you're trying to even it up a bit, make some of them males, make some of them females. One thing I do think that, and I think this was something Fiona said, is that frustration from a female point of view when you see characters in a casting call and they're all someone's wife or they're all someone's girlfriend or mum. No one's really got that independent a role, a specific role that has a purpose rather than just propping a male character up. And I think people overcompensate with that as well by bringing in this female character who's absolutely invincible, you know, the all-powerful woman. Yeah. I think that's overcompensating. I think people need to just write some characters, the characters they need to tell the story, and divvy up the genders.
And they just are women without any conscious thought about why they've put them in there, yeah. Because women roles in fiction tend to be damsels in distress, like in almost any superhero film, or they are that one token woman who is outstandingly brilliant at everything, like in the recent Avengers films, which I know you haven't seen. I presume no. I presume you haven't seen.
And won't see.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, it's almost like trying to, you know, when a corporation tries to combat racism by making sure they've got one ethnic in the cover photo, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So we're aware of it. We're just not comfortable with it yet enough for it just to happen organically, naturally, you know?
Yeah, I mean, looking back at Aftermath, I don't think we ever were conscious of this. And when you look at Aftermath, probably three of the strongest characters were female. And that wasn't a conscious thing. That was just, we decided to write these characters as females. Maybe because we had certain voice actors in mind for performing these roles.
Yeah.
So maybe it comes down to that as well. I certainly know that the last thing that I wrote and completed was Time is Money. The main character in that was female. I've already finished one script for Valenhai, one of the main characters in that is female, but then I've outlined another story and it's just five characters and they're all men. And the reason behind that is because I'm writing away and I have five people in my head that I wanted to play these characters.
Yeah.
It just so happens they're all males. Is there more men in audio drama than women? I don't know. I mean, I did do a survey through my university course last year, and a very small amount of people who filled it in were women. It was, off the top of my head, it was something like 70 men to 7 women, something like that. I'm not sure how much you could look into that. It's a pretty small sample. But is there just... It'd be interesting to go into our Facebook group. There's 200-odd people. How many... What's the ratio of men to women in there? I don't know. We'll have to look into that.
I am convinced, without any stats to back it up, that there are more men than women. That's the feel that I get, you know, that there's definitely more. I mean, we can call on more male actors very quickly that we know are competent than female. Not saying there's lots of crap females out there, just...
Yeah, there's a lot more males out there that are available.
Absolutely. And that's once... Yeah, that's it. We know several strong females that we can call upon to do a good job in almost any story, absolutely, but it's the same three or four. I don't know what it is. I mean, in Aftermath, yeah, we had several female characters. None of them, Aftermath never passed the, I think it's the Bechdel test, where you have two female characters talking to each other and not talking about a male, just talking, having a normal conversation. That never happened, I don't think.
Did that not?
Unless there's a bit where... Oh, no, it... Yeah, it did, I don't know. But Smith talks to... what's her name? Harrison.
Yeah.
But she is technically a cyborg.
Yeah, true. And, and it was about killing some men, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I was also... I was actually surprised that you did like a traditional casting call for your script. It's not, I don't think it's something I would do. I mean, the way we're kind of working with Alan High, in case you're not aware of this, we're just kind of writing our own stuff and we'll probably produce our own stuff, but we'll both advise each other and help each other where it's needed.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, this is your work and you've went down the sort of traditional casting call route.
Only in the podcast group though. I haven't just put it out in the wider web yet.
Yeah.
If at all.
The first story that I wrote, I think there's about 11 characters, and I've jotted down specifically who I would like to play those characters. I've yet to approach them and ask them. But I suppose opening it up to the casting call does mean that you can have some new talent that you weren't previously aware of.
That's why I'm doing it, yeah, because I don't just... I'm already guilty of handpicking one particular person for a role because I know she'll be very good for it. And I know she's got a great microphone. I know she knows her stuff, basically. I won't go into it just now. But yeah, I know she'll do just the ticket for us. But yeah, I want to see who else is out there. There's a lot of names out there in the group alone who have expressed an interest in playing roles for us. And I want to give them the chance to try for the roles. There's a couple of people who have already emailed me to ask, and I have sent them copies of the script to send back, and I'm excited to see what they come up with. And if I feel like I'm struggling still after that, then I'll maybe put it out to the wider group. You know, there's other forums as well, you know, Voice Acting Alliance and so on. But yeah, let's see what the people that listen to the podcast can come up with in the meantime.
So you mentioned Fiona Thrale. Did you have something on Fiona? Were you chatting to her the other day?
I certainly was. I had a wee chat with her yesterday, and I messaged her. I'm going to read it. I said, hey, I just wanted to apologise for being a sexist pig and writing a story with few women in it. And she just sent back like a question mark, like, what? And...
She probably thought you were being really sarcastic and
maybe.
Not even passive aggressive, just...
Yeah. I said, no, you know, my recent story is low on females, but, you know, thing is, medieval setting, women were third-class citizens outranked by horses, and I couldn't quite see past that initially. And she said, oh, you know what, because it was one story out of a future collection, I didn't think that much of it. And I thought, well, thank you, because there will be female roles in future. I promise. And she was saying, yeah, but it's been an ongoing tradition in audio drama. Male hero, male hero, male hero, male hero. Female victim, male hero. And I thought, yeah, that's a good point. So, and she said herself she's guilty of imagining male characters for stories too. And when most stories are told, they work that way, and it's hard to break out of thinking that way. And that's what I was saying. Is it because of society? Is it like gender-specific toys? I remember the film Ghostbusters, when it first came out, they did a report, they asked kids in the playground, do you like playing as Ghostbusters kids? Yeah, yeah, we love it, we like catching ghosts, woo, running around the playground. Can the girls join in with your game and can they be Ghostbusters? And the boys were like, what? Ghostbusters are men! And it was a really interesting... ahead of its time conversation. And I even remember thinking as a 7 or 8 year old, well, clearly the Ghostbusters are men. You're interjecting women into a male role for no reason other than for the sake of it. Write your own roles. And here we are some 30 years later having the same conversation. So anyway, I was talking to her about it, and all right, at least we're aware of the sexism, let's say sexism. The bias, the prejudice, but we're still not quite able to break away from it completely yet, because I've gone ahead and written a story with all-male cast, or maybe that is the way it should have been done. Not all-male, but you know what I mean. So what do we do about it? And I invited her to maybe have a segment on the show next week or the week after.
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, it's a, you know, I could think of 100 things to bring up here, and it's a huge, it's the tip of the iceberg. It's not just an audio drama, it's in popular culture, and it always has been. So yeah, really there's, you know, you can't dive too much into it. I think definitely the best thing to do would be to get somebody like Fiona on. We could chat all day about it, but, you know, essentially we are just two guys, and like I say, it's not without a certain irony that we're having this conversation without a female opinion present.
We're mansplaining. yeah, I want to be able to write more convincing female characters, and I don't want to just swing from one end of the spectrum to the other. I don't want to go to the Mary Jane Watson and Spider-Man being rescued three times in a row in three films to having a female assassin who knows nothing but how to kill, and she's utterly awesome, and she can dodge bullets and beat up men twice her size because women are awesome, damn it. And it's like, well, there are women that exist within those two extremes. There's, you know, there's something between trained killers and utter wimps, surely. We've met them.
Just, you know, my summary, this might really be oversimplifying it, but the way I see it, if I'm outlining a story, say it's, there's 10 characters I need to tell that story, what are the 10 characters? And then just try and divvy up the roles between the two genders. Maybe that is completely oversimplifying it, but that's my perspective. And of course, as always, we welcome yours. I'd love to hear, you know, what are your experiences with this? Is this something that you've been aware of in the past when you're writing your characters and casting your shows? Get in touch and let us know about it. podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Yeah, I can't stress enough, we're not sexist, just possibly ignorant. It's maybe just a blind spot that we can't quite get a squint at, so maybe you can help shed some light.
I love how you're saying we. I didn't write the script.
No, I mean in general. you helped write, you know, Aftermath, and we didn't ever have like four women in a room talking or whatever.
True.
Let's say men in general then, men writers, male writers, if you want to use the right term. Is it something that we can do more to combat in general?
So, I mentioned the email address, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com, for getting in touch, and some people already have. I think they're all men, ironically.
How dare they?
But if you're a female, please get in touch. But Robert, what we got in your post bag over there?
Yes, this one's from Joshua. He says, first, I'd like to thank you so much for your audio drama production podcast. I've been listening for about 8 months, sporadically, so I'm still catching up on back episodes. And you guys have really helped me step up my game in writing and producing my show. Second, as a thank you, I'd like to extend an invitation to you both. I'm finishing up the second season of scripts for The Adventures of Lord Dinby Witherspoon, Duke of Space. And I have a pair of doctors who have a very short conversation as a teaser at the end of one of the episodes. As I was brushing up the script and came across the scene, I thought that it might be fun to have you guys do it. So, first off, this goes back to what we were saying earlier on, just one little bit of feedback now and again saying, hey guys, I love the show. Fantastic. You know, it makes us feel like we're really doing something worthwhile. So, thank you, Joshua.
Yeah, thanks, Joshua. And I actually, Lord Dinby Witherspoon is a show that's been on my radar for a while, and I actually, when that email came in, I was prompted to download a couple episodes and add it to the podcast that I've the playlist that I've got going just now.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to hearing the show and to having a wee role in it as well. So thanks very much.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm looking forward to reading it.
I've got one here from Anthony. He says, hello, Matthew and Robert. I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I was wondering if you could do a show regarding adaptations of books or other written material into radio dramas. I'm very interested in audio drama, however, I'm at a different stage than a lot of others. Many people wish to create their own stories to dramatise, but I was thinking that I could adapt written stories that are popular into radio dramas. For example, I've heard a lot of people like books such as Harry Potter, The Hunger Games, Twilight, etc. I was thinking how great it would be to bring the story to life for them in a powerful way. I would love to hear your opinion of this idea. What are your views of adapting popular reading materials into audio dramas? Let me know what you think. Thanks, and hope to hear from you soon. Thanks very much for that, Anthony. Coincidentally, I'm actually listening at the moment to A Canticle for Leibowitz, which is a book, a post-apocalyptic story, fantastic book that I'd read a couple of years ago. And Kevin Hartnell, the musician, who's producing a lot of stuff for us on Valenhigh at the moment, great guy, a future guest on the show as well, he put me on to the audio drama version of that, which was a 15-parter made by NPR. I think it might have been made a good few years ago now, but I've really, really enjoyed that. And it's amazing how much of the book, you know, the quality of the book that they've been able to carry over. It is quite heavily narrated, but not the sort of narration that imposes itself on the story, or it certainly doesn't spoil it. And yeah, it's got me thinking a bit about, you know, what are some of the books that I really like, and I wonder how many of them have audio drama versions and how many of them I could track down. Yeah. So yeah, what's your views on certainly some of the titles Anthony mentions there are copyrighted, so our feelings on that have always been pretty clear, but there are books out there that are probably in the public domain, aren't there? There are also amateur authors who might love to have their stuff made into audio drama. So I suppose it's quite a wide options there, isn't it?
Yes. I had a bit of a roller coaster thinking to myself about this when I read this email, because first of all, I was like, yes, absolutely. What a great idea. We'd be able to adapt loads of things. And I thought, oh, copyright. This is a really, really tetchy field. I don't want to go down the route of just doing fan fiction, because you can never make anything too worthwhile, because you'll end up just getting pulled up, called out, if you will, by the people that own the copyright. And then I thought, what about public domain stuff? That could be interesting. And then I thought, what about my favourite authors from the past that maybe don't have audiobooks already made, certainly don't have audio dramas made? Is this something we could then say, look, you've already got the rights for the audiobook, however, this is something different, audio drama. Can we do an adaptation? They do these things for BBC Radio 4 all the time. You know, like Good Omens was done at Christmas there on BBC. Is this where we should be going? Should we be taking existing material that people already know, things they've read, and turn them into audio dramas? And is this the way forward? It could be so exciting.
Well, we've talked about the writing process and how we feel that we're maybe beginners when it comes to writing. So look at, like, if you go on Amazon, and I do this all the time, I tend to buy books for my Kindle that are either self-published or from authors who are not very well known at all. And I bet most, if not all of those authors, if we approached them after reading a book that you've really enjoyed, and said to them, look, this is obviously your intellectual property, but with your permission, we'd like to work with you to turn this into either a big one-off audio drama or a small audio drama series. I bet most of them would go for it. And straight away, you've got a story, you've got characters, you've got an arc, and it's, you know, an actual functioning writer has created it.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not just as simple as taking a book and making it an audio drama. There's a lot of work in there, but
there's a lot of stuff to drop away, a lot of the writing, or you have to think about how to convey 3 pages of background detail into 6 seconds of sound or whatever. But maybe that's what we've been practicing already. We've already written stuff and then worked out how to get these notes that we've jotted down into sound.
Yeah.
You know, we've had to think about how to convey them in sound. So that's already what we're competent at. I was going to say good at, but we'll go with competent. Maybe that's where our skill lies, more than real story writing that's going to actually lift the story off the page. Maybe we'll work on that in our 60s. I don't know. But I'm suddenly really excited at the prospect of like I said before, working with real writers, but real works as well, because people, the mainstream stuff that's so popular is easy to watch stuff or easy to listen to stuff or stuff that people already know. People often get audiobooks of books they've already read, as you say, because they're comfortable with it. And maybe that's where the money is.
I think the fun on adaptation as well is that freedom that you're not just going to do a verbatim copy of the book. One of my friends who doesn't listen to audio drama at all, but he kind of knows that I make audio drama, and he said to me one night in the pub, I've got a great idea, you should do this. And he said, the Jungle Book, right? Take the Jungle Book, but set it on like a really rough council estate, and you know, Mowgli is like the young guy on the street and falls in with a bit of a bad crowd, but he's got his mentor and that. And I was thinking, like, that's a really good idea. I mean, I've absolutely no time to do it, but that's the sort of creativity I like to see when people
are. That's incredible.
Yeah. So somebody out there will steal it now, but that's fine. But you know, it's that, it's being innovative with adaptations. I really, really like it. This is not strictly off topic, but I listened to an episode of the Sonic Society recently where David Ault was, he was talking about his days, he was interviewing somebody, but he was talking about his days at uni, and they had to adapt fairy tales, and I think it was Hansel and Gretel, and he said his group at uni adapted this, but they made it a kind of CSI style performance, where the detectives were going in and looking at this, you know, the house, and the kids had been eaten and stuff like that.
How many years ago was this? Because this is what I did.
Did you really?
Well,
same thing.
By the book, with the two detectives going around the fairy tale characters, finding out who's been lopping off bits of fairy tale characters and selling them.
I think David Ault was probably before you on this one.
10 years before, probably.
So you've unwittingly been making fan fiction his work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that. It's that creativity and looking for some way you could adapt a story that's not just taking the book and recreating it.
Yeah. And I was going to say earlier on when we were first talking about the email there from Anthony about adapting stuff, public domain stuff, that you can go as far back in history as you want. There are tales that go right back to the dawn of man, you know, like Aesop's fables and stuff, or Arabian Nights. Loads and loads of really excellent short stories that you'd be able to expand and convert into the modern day.
The Last Man, that's one.
Mary Shelley, is it?
Yeah, I think so, Mary Shelley.
That's one of the things that we cited as the first post-apocalyptic story. But then, I mean, you could say Revelations is that as well. And that was written a bit further ago. So, anything like that, public domain or stuff that people know about, that suddenly the scope has opened up hugely again.
Right, we better crack on because we don't want to run over an hour again, but I think we're going to. So what's next up?
This one's from Christian. He says, hey, Robert and Matthew, I was really interested in the discussion you were having about old world versus new world dialects in fantasy. We really leaned into new world accents in the Once and Future Nerd, despite the pseudo-European setting. In hindsight, we may have gone a little overboard, but in general, I'm still very pro-New World accents in fantasy stories. Linguistically, dialects from the present-day British Isles are no more similar to dialects from centuries ago than other English dialects, e.g. American ones. Language has changed so much over time. In fact, most linguists think that a Southern American accent is more similar to how the English spoke in the 17th century, when they colonised the American South, than present-day British dialects. This is because English speakers in America had very few other English speakers near them to influence their accents, whereas English speakers in England were, of course, surrounded by other English speakers. I'll just stop it there. That's very interesting, actually, to think that there's people in the South of America were isolated linguistically, and now that's like an echo of how people spoke on these isles only 300 years ago. So, a good point. I was going to mention something about American accents in, like North American accents in fantasy, but I'll come to that at the end. So once we acknowledge that historical verisimilitude is probably out the window anyway, then I think that all that's left is for the author, director, and actors to figure out how to use dialects as a meaningful shorthand. Like, for instance, as you were saying on Game of Thrones, dialect is frequently used as a shorthand for class or status. To give an example from the Once and Future Nerd, we chose Boston accents for the residents of Armstrongard because it's a very old port city that houses a prestigious university and has a vaguely Gaelic past. We thought that would be read in a useful way by American audience members. Anyway, that's my two cents. Thought I'd offer them up for the correspondence section. Great episode, as always. Keep up the excellent work, and best of luck with Valenhai. Can't wait to hear it. So, what's your thoughts first off before I launch?
Really good. Kind of reaffirms what we were chatting about the other week. And one of the thoughts I had was, like, look at Skyrim or Oblivion, the Elder Scrolls games. There's a lot of North American accents in those games. And mm-hmm. at no point have I ever thought, this feels unauthentic. So, you know.
Yeah, I want my money back. No, that was it. I suddenly thought back to 7 years worth of Warcraft, and all the humans have North American accents as well. The dwarves have Scottish accents and drink a lot. I don't know what to make of that. That's why I kept saying keep your feet on the ground at the end of podcast for a couple of weeks there, because of the Scottish dwarves in Warcraft. And yeah, other races have American accents. The trolls have Jamaican accents for some reason. And it's fine. So yeah, I climbed down from my earlier stance a few weeks ago thinking, would North American accents work in fantasy settings? Absolutely, yeah. As long as it wasn't like totally Italian American New Yorker, like bada bee bada boo, hey, go ahead. And it's like, yeah, okay, you're not an archer. So as long as it isn't silly and stands out like that, then I think it would be fine.
A couple left here. Avi from the Stories of Mahabharata, another show that I've just added to my playlist. He got in touch on Twitter saying, we use Logic Pro for recording, editing, sound effects, composition, mixing, mastering. Much to like, but no DAW is perfect. That was in response to the episode the other week where we talked about, you know, the things what we edit our shows on, DAWs. Mm-hmm. Just asking, you know, what people use and why they use it. So I've had a wee bit back on that. The last email this week is from William. He says, hey Matthew and Robert, listening to your new episode now while I work, and I thought I'd answer your question about recording and editing software. For Fire on the Mound, again, another show I've just added to my playlist for this coming week, our narrator used Audition in his home studio. Then he sent me the files and I did all the editing in Soundtrack Pro, which I primarily used because it was included with the Final Cut Pro suite. I was a video editor at the time, and this was my NLE. I've no idea what an NLE is. Is it like a DAW for videos? I don't know.
I'm trying to imagine. Native learning environment.
Good. I was excited to use the various podcast features included in Soundtrack Pro, especially the chapter markers. However, I learned the markers were only supported by what the software called enhanced podcasts, which need to be exported as M4A files. But there seemed to be potential compatibility issues across devices, so I opted instead to go with MP3s. Do you have any experience with M4A files?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. What are yours?
They're a pain in the backside. You'll find smartphones, particularly Apple, I think, use M4A. They are a pain because sometimes your DAW will not even recognise them, depending on what you're using. And you'll have to end up using a converter. If anyone does have M4A files and they need to convert them, there are converters online that are free to use, and you don't have to download software. So there is that. And frankly, I would otherwise stay clear of them.
Yeah, that's it. There's a good converter that I use. Quick story for you. When I was at just finished my honours degree there, and you spend all year, I made an audio drama myself, Time is Money. Guys in my class were making binaural performances of music, you know, really, really fantastic sounding things.
Yeah.
It came to the presentation day where members of the public are invited in to come and see your work, and the uni made us present these pieces of audio as FLV flash files. It sounded to me like my show had been downloaded off YouTube. Now, according to Kessie, that was my fault because you can have high rate FLVs. I don't know enough about them, and it seemed to crush my file right down. But my original point, if I could remember, was that there's a converter I use online. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. And I think how that works is you convert your file, you give them your email address, and they email you the download link. And like you say, you don't have to install anything. I would encourage people, if you're ever producing audio for anyone, don't send stuff like that. Don't send them 4A files or anything, or .mov files. At least convert them to MP3 or WAV, really, if you can use WAV. And, you know, I think we've all got access to the capabilities to record in WAV.
Yeah.
Try not to send people stuff like this, because it really is a pain, and it won't take you that long just to convert it. It's not too practical, is it?
Yeah, or change it to MP3 if you have to, but record it as WAV and then send it as MP3 with a high bitrate, at least 128 kbps.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, if you're sending it to someone, ask them what they want.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Because I've been sending out to people saying, can you send me back your voice files as MP3 128 or higher? And we'll see what I get back.
Yeah, if you don't know how to do that, if you don't know how to set the kilobits per second, I can only tell you on Adobe Audition, because that's really what I use.
Yeah.
It's when you say, you've got your WAV file as a mix down.
Yeah.
You go to save it, and instead of selecting WAV, select MP3, and there's a wee box that says options. So you click that.
Once you click MP3 and click save, then there's a dialogue box that comes up, isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah. With the name and the where yeah. you're saving it and all that.
And yeah. it comes up, it says options. If you go into options, you'll find the, you know, you could set your bitrate there. Like, for this podcast now, I think we're right down to about 96, because it's just a speech podcast.
Yeah.
I wouldn't dream of going that low for an audio drama.
Maybe if we sing one episode, we'll put a higher bitrate.
I did for a laugh once. I recorded my voice and saved it at 8 kilobits per second just right. to see what it sounded like.
Did you sound like a Commodore 64?
It was brilliant. So yeah, that's that was back in the days a few weeks ago when I had a bit more time.
Right.
But those days are gone. But I think that's it. We've just hit an hour on the recording. It won't be an hour by the time I've edited it down a wee bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should keep the listener any longer. But please get in touch on anything we've mentioned today, or even anything we've not mentioned today, something that you'd like to hear about in future episodes.
Yeah, I've got not much else. I've already talked about Valenhigh. It's coming along. We've got our stories bubbling away nicely. A few more ideas. Next week's story will be set in a nunnery full of women. No, that's not true.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. if only we had a title for that story. Yeah. No. That's it. Get in touch. podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Otherwise, get us on the Facebook group, and we'll catch you next week, if not before.
Yep. Until next week, handle it up.
Keep your feet on the handle it up. Goodbye.